Iran's UN envoy warns against any adventurism by the US and Israel after the assassination of his country's top nuclear scientist. The U.S. Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Execution says the assassination of the Iranian scientist is a violation of international human rights law and the UN Charter. Also coming up, Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah says Iran's high-profile scientist was killed by, quote, those sponsored by America and Israel. Thank you very much for joining us. Our top story this hour, a senior Iranian nuclear scientist has been assassinated near the capital Tehran. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh sustained serious injuries after his vehicle came under attack by terrorists in the city of Abzad in the northern Damavand county. He was transferred to hospital, but efforts to save him were unsuccessful. Four other Iranian nuclear scientists were assassinated between 2010 and 2012, with Tehran and Western intelligence agencies blaming Israel for those killings. And Iran says there are serious indications of Israel's involvement in the assassination of top Iranian nuclear scientist and Deputy Defense Minister Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Iran's ambassador to the United Nations made the comment in a letter to the world body's chief and the president of the UN Security Council. Majid Takht-Ravanchi urged them to strongly condemn the assassination and take the necessary measures against the perpetrators. He also warned against any U.S. and Israeli adventurism against his country. Takht-Ravanchi said the Islamic Republic reserves the right to defend its people and secure its national interests. Earlier, the ambassador said in a tweet that the assassination is state-sponsored and designed to wreak havoc in the region. Iran's senior officials have condemned the assassination of the country's top nuclear scientist and deputy defense minister, Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Chief of Staff of the Iranian Armed Forces, Major General Mohammad Baqari, pledged a harsh revenge against those behind the terrorist attack. This was echoed by the commanders of the Iranian Army and the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, as well as the intelligence minister. Meanwhile, the military advisor to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Brigadier General Hossein Dehghan, accused Israel of being behind the assassination. The former defense minister said the regime seeks to intensify pressure on Iran in a bid to trigger a full-fledged war. Dehghan warned that Iran will descend like lightning on perpetrators involved in the assassination. The head of the Iranian Judiciary's High Council for Human Rights says the assassination of the country's top nuclear scientist shows enemies are determined to prevent Iran from making progress.
What is noteworthy from my point of view about the assassination attempt made today in Tehran was that there is a serious will by the Iranian's enemy to prevent the improvement and advancement of the Iranian people. They are going to put hurdles on our way.
Ali Baqari said, however, that his country will become stronger and more motivated after this act of terror. Baqari accused the United States and Israel of being behind the assassination. He said Washington, after the failure of its so-called maximum pressure campaign against Iran, has resorted to terrorism. He also condemned the European Union for its silence over the targeted killing, saying this quiet is tantamount to supporting terrorism. The United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Execution says the assassination of the Iranian scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh is a violation of international human rights law.
An extraterritorial targeted killing outside an armed conflict is a violation of international human rights law prohibiting the arbitrary deprivation of life and a violation of the UN Charter prohibiting the use of force extraterritorially in times of peace.
Former director of the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency has also described the assassination of Iran's top nuclear scientist as a highly reckless criminal act. In a series of tweets, John O'Brien said Fakhrizadeh's murder risks lethal retaliation and a new round of regional conflict. Meanwhile, the Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah condemned Fakhrizadeh's murder as a heinous attack sponsored by the U.S. and Israel. Hezbollah's deputy leader also stressed that the assassination was part of a war on Iran and the region. Sheikh Naim Qasim said that the response to the murder is in Iran's hands. Yemen's Ansarullah and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad resistance movement also condemned the attack. Imam Muhammad Ali Ilahi is an imam at the Islamic House of Wisdom. Welcome, Imam. What do you make of the international reaction to this act of terrorism?
It is so sad, an ugly act. It's shocking, and it is shameful. It's like a law of jungle, and an act of enemies of peace, enemies of science, enemies of humanity, enemies of human rights and integrity. We condemn any kind of terrorism. We don't have good terrorism, bad terrorism. If Al-Qaeda does it, that is bad terrorism, but if it is supported by state, then it is good terrorism. No, this is hypocrisy, this is a double standard. And the question is here that what was the crime of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh? What is really the justification for killing a scientist? As you just mentioned, even the ex-CIA chief, John Brennan, even he said that this is a violation of international law, and called it an act of state-sponsored terrorism. And he said that, as a matter of fact, this man, Fakhrizadeh, it was not a target because he was not ISIS, he was not Al-Qaeda, he was not part of any terrorist organization. So what is the justification for that, except to call it a criminal act and a reckless act? And it is very sad that the President of the United States, when he actually retweeted a statement from an Israeli journalist, that Trump said that, yeah, based on this journalist, the assassination of Fakhrizadeh was a major psychological and professional blow for Iran. Looks like he enjoys what happened. So it is very, very irresponsible. I know that, you know, John said that he asked Iranian to wait till United States after January 20th have a responsible leadership in international stage. Because there is the fear that because of failure of Netanyahu and failure of Trump, this period, and especially with everything that's going on, this crazy crisis in the United States, this period is very, very dangerous. We know that both Netanyahu and bin Salman of Saudi Arabia, they want to make sure that there is no improvement in relationship between Iran and United States, and they do everything to take advantage of this situation. to make more mess in the Middle East. But obviously the act of terrorism is condemned, and especially its carelessness. In the United States yesterday, we had 185,000 new cases of coronavirus. In one single day, almost 200,000 new cases. In one single day yesterday, over 2,200 people lost their lives because of this pandemic. So far, over 262,000 Americans died. And for somebody like Trump to be worried about that and work to defeat this enemy, he is quoting the Israeli newspaper and Israeli journalists to see that, wow, this was a psychological blow to Iranians. So this is a very, very dangerous development to support an act of terrorism, to give green light to criminals to go and kill somebody who is just a scientist. I personally didn't know Fakhrizadeh. All I know that he is known as being a scientist. And there is no justification. It's unbelievable. It's extremely ugly. It's criminal. It's careless to kill such a person. And then this is dangerous for the international community, that if terrorism is promoted, so how can you stop it? So how can you condemn Al-Qaeda? How can you condemn ISIS? How can you condemn Al-Shabaab? If you are supporting this kind of terrorism to go to another country and target a scientist, so it's obviously so criminal, no justification, it's unbelievable that this kind of thing happen in the world. And of course we hope that we hear more voices of condemnation from American politicians. I didn't hear from Biden yet, but they are so much busy in their own internal problems and everything that's going on in this political game. But we expect the European countries, that they are very much ready to condemn Iran for any excuse. That is a test, that is a trial, that is a challenge to show their honesty, to show their integrity, to condemn terrorism in any format.
Okay, Imam, thank you very much indeed for that. We appreciate your comments there. Imam Muhammad Ali Elahi is the Imam of the Islamic House of Wisdom, joining us out of Michigan. Turning elsewhere, the Polish Senate Speaker has warned the government against vetoing the European Union's new budget, saying it could lead to the country's exit from the EU. Tomasz Grodzki said a veto is against the good of the country, as it could undermine Poland's interests. Grodzki also warned that people will not forgive the government if this decision leads to Poland's divorce from the EU and a loss of money for the country's development. On Thursday, Poland and Hungary issued a joint statement on their veto of the next EU budget and post-coronavirus recovery package after their prime ministers met in Budapest. They said they seek to limit any rule of law conditionally tied to the EU budget, and that such a link should be further discussed. The EU and the UK say there are still major stumbling blocks to achieving a post-Brexit trade deal, with time quickly running out for an agreement. The British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said the two sides are still seeking to bridge, quote, substantial and important differences. He tried to shift the burden of responsibility for reaching an agreement on the EU, saying a deal can be struck if they want to do it. Meanwhile, EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier said the same significant divergences persist in the talks. One EU diplomat also said there are only a few days left for the talks. Face-to-face Brexit trade talks will resume in London this weekend as the December 31st deadline looms. The negotiations are still centered on three main issues, namely fishing, state aid, and dispute resolution. Religious leaders call for greater efforts by EU authorities to tackle growing levels of Islamophobia and anti-Semitism across the 27-nation bloc. During a video conference organised by the European Commission, they also criticised the EU's treatment of refugees. Jerome Hughes reports.
Despite the apparent demise of the Trump era, it is clear that the far-right movement in the West is still alive and well. White supremacy, racism and xenophobia are problems in every EU country.
But this is the end! It's the end! Enough's enough!
Coordinated by the European Commission Brussels, religious leaders from all of the main faiths have just taken part in a video conference.
Reports of anti-Semitic and anti-Muslim attacks are now almost part of everyday life in our beloved Europe.
The leaders say the answer is to show more unity and greater mutual respect.
I want to say that if somebody hurts a Muslim sister, a Jewish brother, they are hurting me.
The European Union's much criticized asylum policy also came under the spotlight during the event.
Europe loses its soul if we continue to watch people drowning in the Mediterranean. That is why we support civil rescue missions.
Religious leaders insist the European Union must do more to ensure refugees play a positive and productive role in society. Experts agree.
There were mistakes in integration of the migrants, and there were mistakes in education, or lack of education, or lack of access to the educational system.
In the past, Saudi Arabia has been criticised for sponsoring terrorism in the EU. The European Commission says it is easier to brainwash vulnerable young men when they do not feel part of a community.
This sense of belonging would be the best shield against radicalisation, terrorism, and hatred.
Work is continuing to try and curtail terrorist recruitment online in the EU. However, sociologists believe that is not the root cause of the security issue.
They say the source of the problem is not the internet, but the current climate within society. The focus should be on changing that, they argue. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
That brings it into our bulletin for this hour.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
By artificially delaying the industry's inevitable decline at American taxpayers' expense, the U.S. government has made it that much harder to make the necessary transition to clean energy sources, says Brett Wilkins, writer, in an article published under the heading, Time to Cut Dirty Energy Lifeline. Report details how fossil fuel industry feasted on COVID-19 relief programs. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. In a year in which the United States has already suffered 16 climate-driven extreme weather events, causing more than $1 billion in economic damages, and as millions of American workers face loss of essential unemployment benefits due to congressional inaction, a report published recently reveals that the Trump administration has given fossil fuel companies as much as $15.2 billion in direct relief, and tens of billions more indirectly, through federal COVID-19 recovery programs since March. The report by Bailout Watch, Public Citizen, and Friends of the Earth, entitled Bailouts and Propped Up, tracks taxpayer funds flowing to fossil fuel companies since pandemic-related bailouts began. It found a total of $110 billion in direct and indirect benefits went to 66 companies, including Bitfin, $10.4 and $15.2 billion in direct disbursements to coal, oil, and gas companies that are largely responsible for the worsening climate emergency. Here's a breakdown. According to the report, at least $5.5 billion went to 70 money-losing polluters via the Coronavirus Act Relief and Economic Security, that is CARES Act. $582 million in direct subsidized loans were approved for 37 mid-sized fossil fuel and related companies through the Federal Reserve's Main Street Lending Program. $4.3 to $9.1 billion in forgivable loans went to at least 25,931 companies through the Small Business Administration's Paycheck Protection Program. At least 229 oil and gas companies received waivers for fees normally paid to drill on public land, giveaways that cost the government a minimum of $4.5 million in lost revenue, and luckily far more. The report found that five fossil fuel companies, Diamondback Energy, EOG Resources, Marathon Petroleum, Phillips 66, and Valero received more than 10% of the $110 billion in direct benefits, including tax refunds and indirect support through the issuance of bonds, even if they were losing money. Reassured by the Fed's actions, private investors purchased more fossil fuel bonds, generating some $100 billion in additional indirect benefits. When the pandemic hit last spring, President Donald Trump's corporate cronies made sure the fossil fuel industry was able to squeeze whatever favors they could out of the resulting economic rescues, wrote Alan Zibo, research director of Public Citizen's Corporate Presidency Project and a co-author of the report. The Biden administration and the next Congress will have a golden opportunity to ensure efforts to rescue the economy no longer benefit the very companies most responsible for the devastation caused by the climate change, he added. Christopher Kubecki, a Bailout Watch analyst and co-author of the report, added that the fossil fuel industry took advantage of the pandemic to put their hands out for help, escaping a financial mess of their own making. And their allies in the federal government rode to the rescue. By artificially delaying the industry's inevitable decline at taxpayers' expense, the government has made it that much harder to make the necessary transition to clean energy sources, he added. The report comes just after members of Congress headed home on vacation without having passed a new coronavirus relief bill, and as millions of Americans face the grim prospect of losing essential unemployment benefits as the CARES Act is set to expire at the end of the year. Last week, Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez excoriated Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the floor of the House of Representatives, accusing him of abandoning American people. While thousands of people in Texas lined up for food lines, hospitals no longer have beds to house the sick, and 30 million Americans are on the brink of eviction. McConnell dismissed the Senate, said Ocasio-Cortez. Every single day, when we go back to our communities, people are asking us, where is there going to be help? Is there going to be a second stimulus check? Are we going to get the resources that we need? Climate activists and many economists argue that giving money to those most culpable for carbon emissions is the exact opposite of what governments should be doing. One economist says that instead of selling fossil fuel bonds, governments should be prompting green climate bonds. With a mere fraction of the COVID-19 recovery funds, central banks could support climate protection, wrote World Future Council chief economist Matthias Kroll recently. He continued, "The price for coping with systematically relevant climate crisis appears almost to be a bargain. With a fraction of the funds used to overcome the COVID-19 crisis or the banking crisis of 2008, the central banks could trigger investments in climate protection of a magnitude that would make the 1.5 degrees centigrade target under the Paris Agreement achievable. The central banks would not even need to create additional money for this. It would be sufficient to replace expiring assets from previous purchase programs with new types of green climate bonds." A May 2020 study by the World Future Council estimated the cost of a global climate bailout at a relatively modest $175 million per year, resulting in a one-third reduction in worldwide carbon emissions by the end of the decade. "We need to start thinking about how to practically finance a Green New Deal and a swift transition to 100% renewable energy, and central banks should start playing a proactive role," wrote Kroll. "Let's treat the climate emergency at what it is, and let's bail out the climate too."
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and yesterday we observed the passing away anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Masuma, peace be upon her, who reposes in eternal peace in the city of Qom, where devotees seek her intercession with God Almighty with these words: "O Fatima, intercede for me for the reward of paradise, for certainly you have with God a lofty status."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Bow.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to the program Back to Reality on IRIB English Radio. And with me today are two lovely brothers. Assalamu alaikum, brother. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. This is Mohsen Naqvi. Thanks for inviting.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is Daro from US. Thank you.
Assalam. So, the topic that we have for today is, how can violence against girls and women be stopped? You know, as we know today, there is a lot of violence against women in this world. You know, they're being beaten up either by their husbands, sometimes it's at their workplace, or in general in society, we see a lot of violence against women. What's the way, what can we do to stop this?
This is a very interesting question. You know why? Because like, for example, you see like violence against children, violence against workers, employees. Mm-hmm. So employer to employees. And then like, you see all these pressures that mm-hmm. comes from different, you know, different topics, different sects, group of people.
Yeah.
From this religion to that religion, for example, this tribe to that tribe. I find that very interesting that all this thing has to do with the justice and adl of mm-hmm. the human being and human society and individual. It has to do with the character. It doesn't have to do with the gender, being a male or a female. This question by itself can be misguiding by itself.
Wouldn't you say that as men, we don't really get that much beaten up?
What are you saying? It's not necessarily the man. Yeah. Violating the girls or the women.
Yeah, it could be. There are some societies, the woman abuses the men. So this question, yeah, you might be seen more because it's more apparent. Because, yeah. Oh, this guy is hitting his wife, or this guy is abusing this lady, this girl. We have this thing through the history. This is the nature of human to abuse and put the pressure on the weak.
Right.
So, you know, even the Islam, when it came to protect the female. It came to protect the woman. You know, it raised the woman's status in the society and the culture. So that's how you, one of the way I think you can distinguish between the right and wrong.
Sure, but the question is, you know, how do we prevent these crimes from happening, right? How do we prevent this violence? And I would say,
The question is, can I prevent it individually? Can I prevent it in my home? Can I prevent it in my city? Can I prevent it in my country? Can I prevent it in the whole society? It's just like, there's no answer. It's like, you have to know your capabilities.
So one example that I can give is how, for example, some things are being prevented in society, right? Is that, let's take the coronavirus right now, right? There is so much awareness about coronavirus, right? About wearing a mask, about people being shamed for not wearing a mask, right? Wouldn't you say, and I'll ask both of you, can this not be done for these type of crimes? Can we not raise awareness? You know, can people not be trained by the media like it is?
No.
People
cannot be trained. Because it's about the jihad on nafs. It's about the individual character. You have to work on your character as an individual. Human beings are not coronas. Each individual, each female and male are different. Yeah. They have different identities. They have different characters. They have different backgrounds. So what am I standing like? How can you really? That's what we have, bad and good in this world.
Yeah, I'll give you a chance to respond.
Well, I think when we talk about the stopping the violence against the girls and the women, or maybe the other parts of the society or the entities of the society, first we need to look at the reasons. Why is this happening?
Yep.
And if we can stop those reasons from happening, the violence will stop automatically. That's the first thing.
Right.
Giving awareness is a good thing. But the point is how we need to stop these things. And obviously, there are different ways. There is a role of a media into this. And the major thing that I can see, the major part or the main reason behind this violence is media itself.
Yeah, how do you blame the media for this?
There are two things. Number one, the news part. You know, in today's world, we see a lot of news regarding these cases.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you give the news, the more things are coming up. The more fear is amongst the people. Obviously, when you talk about something, it comes into your mind. It saves in the part of your mind. And then tomorrow, if someone is weak and he does not have a strong heart, or he cannot control his wishes or desires, he will go towards that. And this is a fact that the human beings are weak. That's the first thing. The second thing is, the media has made everything easy. For example, pornography is there. Mm-hmm. For example, the movies that they are making, why they're showing the love of, for example, the two couples into the movies.
Mm-hmm.
When you're portraying, when you're showing everything on the TV box, which is in the house, in which the brother, sisters, father, mother, the parents, they all are sitting next to each other and they're watching a movie, and then they're just watching it as a normal thing. They see it as a normal thing. It's not something extraordinary or maybe unusual for them.
Yeah.
When it does not look for them, then obviously tomorrow these kids gonna go and try the same thing.
But that's my point, though, right? That you're saying the media is teaching people, right?
Yes.
And I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. The same media can be used to teach people.
Yes, it is. No, the first thing is you need to stop these things first. Obviously, you know, when someone becomes sick, first you cure. Because, for example, if I have a sugar and I eat a lot of medicines to control my sugar, but on the other hand, I do not stop eating sugar or taking the sweet things or sweets, I cannot be cured. First, I need to stop taking the sweets first. The main thing is you need to identify the reasons why this violence is happening so much.
Mm-hmm.
And why is this happening? You need to stop those things first. And then give the awareness. And then there is a role of government, obviously, that they should give the awareness through the councils, the society, you can say the halls, or the churches or the mosques and all those. So even the schools, the teachers, they can give the awareness. Today we have this issue that even in the school we have such educations, whereas they should be separated. Obviously, if you separate the girls class from the boys' class, and then you teach something, and if a lady teacher is teaching the things that they needed, if you teach them, that's fine. But here we see it's all mixed up. They show everything, and today we have seen, like, they bring two men next to each other and they say, this is a husband and this is wife. You know, this media, this society, the society has the main role. This violence is happening because of the society. Because of those who think that the modernization is something new and which is advancement, this type of modernization is taking you back towards the Stone Age.
I don't think people are violent against women because of modernization. It's kind of a...
No, the modernization has a big role in it.
It's been happening for thousands of years. In fact,
It is happening, but it wasn't on this scale. That's the point.
I'm thinking it's become less now compared to the past. In the past. Husbands used to beat their wives all the time.
You're just looking at one aspect of things.
Yes.
The beating is one thing. Abuse, rape, yes, or
addictions.
Kidnapping, addiction. Uh-huh. These are all things. We need to see all the aspects of the
society.
So
you're defining violence in a much broader term, in terms of abuse.
We need to, obviously. It's not just about the husband meeting the wife.
And the moment, in that moment that he's eating it.
Yeah, huh?
What is behind it? What is the root cause?
And one more thing, that this modernization which it brought, you know, Islam has covered the woman into the veil. And this veil protects her. And when you take this veil from her, she's open to all.
Now, would you agree or disagree that in some Islamic cultures, right? And I know a personal case where I know someone who is actually being beat by their husband, and the girl's father actually supported the husband in this case, okay? Because they said that, you know, he's the husband, he has a right to do this. Or if you go to some countries, it's sometimes considered part of the culture to be able to do this, right? How do you address this issue that in Islamic culture sometimes it's an acceptable thing to be able to beat your wife?
It's not just Islamic culture. If you go to Mexico, it's Hispanic culture. They eat pork and alcohol, and they have the same belief system.
Uh-huh.
It's a culture. It's not Islam. It's not a religion, and it has to do nothing with the religion. And this is a human nature, as I said before, and the brother mentioned, it was in the past existed. Right? It depends on the character of the individual, how he treats the the person in front of them. Mm-hmm. It's like you see some kids, they see a beautiful flower, they try to preserve it. You see some kids, they go and pick up all the flowers, they try to destroy all the things. It's a nature. It's a training. So when somebody is destroying, you have to teach them, train them how to preserve and protect. It's the same thing. The female or the woman or the girls, they are the weak individuals. They're like flowers. As a brother mentioned, you put the whale, you put the cover, you put the nets around them to keep them away from the bugs. So we have to teach our women, we have to teach ourselves in the society that we have to protect our females. The protection gives them the dignity. And the research and a lot of things they did, the women who covered themselves in the Europe and the West, they're more protected compared to the women that are being exposed. And, you know, just the whale is a remembrance of something that Allah commanded for the female to put on their head. Mm-hmm. So even though, if you're a Muslim and you're a Chauvinist and you're backwarded and you are, don't have the, you are not trained how to treat the woman, you're going against the sunnah of Prophet ﷺ, and you treat the woman wrongly, by seeing that hijab should be the sign. It should be the sign that this woman, it's the amanat. It's something that have to be protected by you. It's a responsibility for you.
I mean, one thing I think you mentioned is that, you know, it's very much related to culture, right? You mentioned it's, for example, in Mexico, I think you said, or in the Hispanic culture, this is also something that happens. Yes. So we can see that strategies have been used to change culture, right? For example, things like you mentioned, like, you know, homosexuality was a crime and now it's become like normal. Or we see, I would say even hitting children, you know, when I was growing up, kids would get beat up by their parents. But today, you know, people are against it. You know, you'll find there's so much awareness about this issue.
That's the media, basically. Huh? That's media. One more thing I need to mention is, why is it necessary to have, for example, the receptionist be a girl? You know, the air hostess to be a girl. And yes, they are working. They need to have a work, but, you know, they have the, you know, the big companies, if you go to them and you look at their expenses for the secretary or the boss's secretary or the receptionist, their makeup stuff is bought by the company itself. They're spending this much money on these things. Why? Is it necessary? So when you're basically showing off something or you're trying to portray something in front of public, obviously the man is weak.
I don't see a link between a woman working as a receptionist secretary and violence being committed against her.
There is no relation directly, but indirectly there is a relation.
See the indirect relationship.
Okay,
I'm just saying, if somebody's working, how is there violence?
Like, no, for example, expectations. We are made by the expectation. You know, as brother mentioned, when you raise the expectation of the society of the female, and you said this is the icon. This is the icon. This is the woman. The woman should look like that, for example. Mm. And a lot of people, like a lot of brothers, like they're not happy in their homes because their ideology and the mindset has changed about who is the perfect woman. So instead of looking the role of the woman in the life, which kind of mother she is, is she following the sunnah of Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam? Is she a good example, like Fatima Zahra? She comes, if she's gonna love that woman, she's gonna be proud of that woman, or the woman is just going to be a shame to the Muslim society. So when you change the iconic of the woman, and that you represent the woman, as brother mentioned, you spend the money and the makeup and for this female and to be a secretary, to be an image of the company.
What would you say? Okay, that might...
There is one more thing.
That might be an indirect link, okay?
we have even the cases that I've seen that there was a divorce between the husband and wife just because the husband wasn't looking like that, for example, actor, and the wife wasn't looking like the specific female actor who was playing a role. So even these things are affecting the houses, the relation between husband and wife. Because when husband, for example, a man is watching a movie and he thinks about a specific woman working in that or playing in that movie, he wants to see his wife like that because he likes that shape, maybe.
Yeah.
So these are the things that we need to think about.
In my view, like, these things don't... They might be indirect links, or you're saying it has a psychological impact.
In general public,
what would be the direct causes of this violence, right? For example, would you say that lack of education, for example?
Lack of faith, brother. It is
lack of faith, lack of education. We need to give awareness, especially in the Islamic cultures that you mentioned, for example... like in the Middle East or some Islamic countries, yeah. the husbands are beating their wife. We need to, obviously, they should be given awareness that Islam does not allow you to do this. The only reason is within the Muslim societies, we see that the Muslims, even they don't read Quran. They don't know what this Quran says. Because if they know what Quran says, they will not beat or hurt or do violence against their even wives. So this is the case. It's because of the ignorance that they have. They're not aware of these things. And obviously, in order to give awareness, there is a role of media, the role of government. The media, where it is showing a lot of things, it should show these things as well. It should convey this message as well, the message of Quran, that it is the religion of peace. You need to live in your house in a way that you serve your family. And obviously, we have the role models for us. For example, Fatima Zahra Salam alayha, Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. These are the role models. We know about their life, their lifestyle. We should follow.
And I think, you know, one thing we should be aware of when we talk about this topic is that this topic is used as a switch and bait many times. I don't know if what I mean is that they'll present this topic for one reason, but it will be used for something else, right? For example, feminism today in the West, they bring this topic, you know, the violence against women, which is something we need to talk about. But then they will leave that alone and then they'll take on their own agenda, right?
The problem with the feminism is that they forgot why they started. the first day feminism started because women were not allowed to work. So they started to protest that we should also be allowed to work. So in those cases, yes, they have their rights. Islam talks about their rights. But today's feminism is something else, which is extremely 180 degree against what it was started for, the reason it was started for. So basically, feminism itself is a problem.
So very interesting discussion. And, you know, we all have different points of views about this. But I think mainly we all agree that there needs to be more awareness about this. People need to know more about this. And ultimately, you know, we need to change our culture and society to help protect women from being
and empower the
woman. Harmed. Yeah, and Islam is all about, you know, protecting women and protecting a woman's dignity. And it's all about respect and love towards all members of society, of course, not just women, children, elderly, everyone. Islam even cares about plants and trees and, you know, even the ant. So we just need to become more educated and aware about these issues. So thank you so much for listening to Back to Reality. Please continue listening to these episodes. Take care. Fi amanillah.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabbal Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabbal Alameen, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
Food for thought.
As we talk about border ethics, as we talk about immigration, as we talk about the times, I want to draw from a personal experience. I've had the ability to visit Mexico a few times. I've been to Juarez, I've been to Tijuana, and I've been to the border at Tornillo, McAllen, San Diego. And one of the things that struck me when I went to Juarez in particular was how similar it looked to the Syrian refugee camps. And I started to realize that at some point, poverty, destruction, devastation all looks the same, no matter where you are. I also noticed that when you look in the eyes of a child, that is caged at our border or is suffering the consequences of our bombs and our destructive foreign policy overseas. You see both the same sanctity that God has given to every single human being, and you also see despair, desperation. And one of the things that I'll never forget, some of you might remember Tent City. If you go online and you look up Tornillo, Texas, the Reverend Oscar was just talking about some of his work in immigration. If you look at Tornillo, Texas, Tornillo set up this tent city where they were housing migrants, literally, in tents. And there was no access given to the press, no access given to the media. And those children had no access to outside legal help, medical care, no oversight, completely whisked away from the American public that is ever so ignorant about the way that its tax dollars are being used to traffic children from Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala, Mexico, all for the sake of these vicious donors of Donald Trump and other people that belong to this segment of society that have no qualms about trafficking and oppressing the vulnerable for deeper financial gains. And I went to Tornillo, Texas, and I had the opportunity to actually interact with those kids. Dallas County Judge Clay Jenkins was able to work to get us access to offer pastoral care. And I wanted to be able to do more. My colleagues, particularly at that time from the United Methodist Church, brought arts and crafts. We said, you know, we'll take the time to do more than just talk to the kids and pray with the kids and pray for them, but actually, you know, take some arts and crafts, give them some relief in the moments of the distress that they're in. And I asked for a brother to help me translate some of the verses in the Quran about hardship and ease, about supplication and prayer. And he did that. So I took Surah Al-Duha, I took Alam Nashrah Laka Sadrak, I took Wa Idha Sa'alaka Ibadi Anni Fa Inni Qareeb. Some of those verses about hardship and ease and God's help translated into Spanish for my portion of that. And when we got to Tornillo, Texas, I recited the Quran in Arabic, and a Hispanic Catholic minister recited the Spanish translation. And then those kids came up to us, and because their background, for many of them, they'd never met a Muslim before, their background is Catholic, and we were handing out food, and some of them took the bread as a form of communion. And they were coming up to me, and they were asking for prayers. Even though I'm a Muslim, that's the human bond, that natural compassion that was flowing both ways, those smiles that were flowing both ways in those moments. And each and every single one of those kids, when they asked for prayers, asked for us to pray for their moms, asked for us to unite them with their families. They were completely oblivious to what my background was. All they knew was that there was someone in front of them that cared about them. And whether that was the United Methodist minister or the Muslim imam or the Jewish rabbi, whoever it was, was someone that actually took a moment to recognize their humanity and that wanted to contribute to their relief. I had a chance to offer the Human Rights Annual Lecture at Duke University this year. If you search up that lecture on border ethics, if you put my name on YouTube and put border ethics, you'll see that full lecture. Or actually put images up of my experience in the camps at the Syrian border as well as the Mexican border. And you can see that devastation and how similar it begins to look. And the reality is that the divisions that exist amongst us theologically, the differences that we have theologically, are not the ones that are causing the death and destruction at our border and in so many places around the world. but the similarities in our humanity and our ability to dig deep into our theologies so that we could be further activated for the betterment of the people around us can actually make a positive difference in the world around us. We can actually do incredible things when we dig deep into our theology and use that for the betterment of humanity as a whole. As Muslims, we are called to offer shade and fruit, not just to the Muslim community. Allah says about the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam, وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَاكَ إِلَّا رَحْمَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ. We have not sent you except as a mercy to the worlds. Not as a mercy to the Muslims, as a mercy to the worlds. And so when we show up to the table, whether it is a Christian minister or a Jewish rabbi or someone from the Sikh community or whatever community they might be coming from, when we show up to the table, it is not about the theology that brings us to that table in the first place. It's about how we're going to use what has been manufactured inside of us, what has been engineered inside of us, to support those around us and to show people the beauty of that engineering through our actions. We have to reach across these tables and recognize that there are people that are sick and tired of being sick and tired, that don't want to see this oppression anymore, that are willing to challenge themselves, challenge their communities, challenge their societies, to uplift the downtrodden, to uplift those that are in poverty, to uplift those that are in need, and feel activated by their faith. Not only unhindered, but activated by their faith to work for the betterment of all of those around them. As Muslims, Allah calls us to that, and bi'idhnillahi ta'ala, we will answer that call. We are proud to work with our allies, and we are grateful to those communities that stood by our side during Muslim ban and in so many other iterations of Islamophobia that have come under this administration as well as previous administrations. But we want to be a source of comfort as well. We don't want to just be comforted. We want to be comforting as well. We don't want to just be a community that garners the sympathy of others when we are targeted, but we want to be a community that is able to stand with others as they are being targeted as well, and to be part of a solution where communities are no longer targeted on the basis of their faith or their race or whatever else that causes them to be targeted. So I pray that Allah allows us to lead the way in working with other communities to uplift our brothers and sisters in humanity, wherever they may be, and to be a productive force for good here in this country, as well as the world around us. Allahumma ameen. Thank you, Mass, for putting this together and for this incredible convention. And to all of you that have been a part of this, Jazakumullahu khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Microplastic pollution has been discovered in snow close to the peak of Mount Everest, the world's highest mountain. With plastic debris revealed in 2018 at the deepest point on Earth, the Mariana Trench, it is now clear that humanity's litter has polluted the entire planet. The tiny plastic fibers were found within a few hundred meters of the top of the 8,850-meter mountain, at a spot known as the Balcony. Microplastics were found in all the snow samples collected from 11 locations on Mount